that it tells us that something is not right, and I think there's an element of truth in that statement. Yes, I would agree with that.
No further question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mazone. Okay. Honourable Dlamini.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, Mr. Montana, for being courageous. You are really a fighter, because we need the fearless in this country. Otherwise, if all remain cowards, you know what happens. Tell me, you are saying the minister who's coming tomorrow is your friend or your colleague, your comrade. Did you, on that first meeting when he brought to Tuzane and Rajesh, when they left as your friend, to ask him, how did you get to know about these people? How did they make contact with him so that he can even arrange that they must come to his house and bring you into that house, knowing exactly what your position in the company?
Well, at that time, when the meeting was convened, I was not even given time to prepare. It was like, in Pretoria, where the minister stays and where I stay, it's not far. Just said, I need to see you. Can you pop in quickly? So that's how it was arranged. It was not a notice we're going to meet. And those guys didn't arrive a bit later. So, and I had to leave, as I said, I was preparing for a trip. I had to go. I was not suspicious of anything. I thought, look, ministers get lobbied by people, and they've got constituencies. They go there. People ask them to do things. I respected that. But what I found in Berlin is what actually opened my eyes that we're dealing with trouble here. But before that, no, I didn't take it. But yes, myself and Honourable Ben Martins, our relationship is good. We talk about anything under the sun. So I respect him, and that's the context.
But you didn't ask him even after from Berlin to say, but I mean, how did you get to know about these people? Especially when you get to Berlin, the same culprits are here.
In the last, I actually in my submission deal with that part, because after all these fights, he then convened, he invited us to say, look, like he must not resign, can you come to Cape Town and see me? We flew to Cape Town. And at that time, we felt that look, people may be eavesdropping on us and listening to the discussion. So we then arranged it as a briefing at the Cape Town station. So the minister left the office in 120 Plain Street, came to Cape Town station. We left our phones in the office, and we said, look, we'll take you through the station to brief you about the work that we're doing to modernize the Cape Town station. It was through that discussion that Honorable Ben Martins took us into his confidence, and he did indicate that, look, when those guys came, he didn't realize the agenda. They asked for a meeting. He got a call from Duduzani. They wanted to meet with him, but he didn't realize that the level of criminality. So he tried to manage it at the beginning, but I think at the end, Ben Martins took a stance, and he told us, and I think it's there in my submission to say,
no, it's fine. It's coming here
that
tomorrow.
I'm with you, and I will support you. Don't worry about this guy.
No, it's fine. It's coming here tomorrow. We'll test that stance. You know, the Deputy Minister of Finance, when he came out, and that's when we realized that where you are now, ANC is an unforgiving party, because Mcebisi Jonas, he said Gupta has offered him 600 million. ANC, they said this man will never be part of our leadership. Did they offer you when they said they were going to arrange something in Dubai?
Order. There is no statement like that.
It's not a rule issue. Must read the rules.
He was nominated there, and the delegates refused him, so it's fine. But Mr. Montana, what I'm dealing with is, when the Gupta said we'll arrange something for you in Dubai, did they give you the amount to say we'll arrange you something?
No, I didn't even entertain it. I was angry.
All right. Then there's a cabinet memo that talks from George Mahlalena. It talks about the changing of the board, and put Jimmy Mani and the other Guptas. So you're saying that was tabled into the cabinet. What happened to that?
No, the reason why I wrote this letter that I read today is because I was actually objecting to say, if we take this cabinet memo and appoint these people, that then I'm prepared to leave, but I'll tell the country. So that's what I'm saying there. So it was ultimately not implemented, but I think that's where Honorable Ben Martin showed that he meant when he said, look, I'll never allow it. I'm supporting you guys.
To the issue of Zweli Mkhize, the advocate asked you that the people, they think you're going to come here because you are bitter or anything. Let me just help you on the issue of Zweli Mkhize. Zweli Mkhize came here to Parliament in the Committee of Political Party Funding. He confirmed that the ANC took money from the Guptas. He confirmed as a Treasurer General. So I want to clarify that so that I can help you that on that issue of Zweli Mkhize, there's no bitterness. It's the truth. Himself, he came here to confirm that. But he came to us for 10% to those guys. Do you know whether he got that 10% maybe after you refused? Did he make a direct contact with them to get the 10%?
There was no 10% paid. I refused. There was no 10% that was going to be paid. And I made it very clear it was unlawful. We can't do it.
Thank you. Finally, Chair, that's why I don't have a lot of questions because I think you were clear, and I think the country knows what you need to do. Look, I'm not sure in our list if Mr. Molefe is they're all corrupt. Popo Molefe is coming to the committee. We'll deal with the issue of patronage on that day. But you're saying you've been given the firearm. Do you have a certificate? How does it work? Because I thought the firearm, you go through a process. Do you have a certificate? Can you borrow? How does it work to be just given a firearm?
No, you're right. You remember that prior to the passage of the Arms Control, the current act that is there, there was a completely different procedure, and we had to be, I had to, of course, go for training. At that time, I'd already received a certificate when I was still in the Department of Transport, when I was fighting with the taxi people. So I got my certificate, my competencies were very clear, and PRASA gave me the firearm. And yeah, I returned it just a month before my contract expired. Yeah.
Okay, finally, can you place it on record that the trains that you, when I choose that you got the trains with the wrong spec, that information is incorrect, and you're saying they are parked in Bramfontein. Why are they not being used? If the spec is correct, the trains are within the lines that were set, no, these trains are above the lines. Now we are saying here on the record, that is all false. Do you have a reason why are they parked in Bramfontein after so much investment? Why are they not being used? And are they correct specification? That is my final question, Chairperson. Thank you.
I think that's, you know, that question is very important, Chair. If you look at page 38, page 39, page 40, page 41, page 42, page 43, page 40, until page 44 at the top there, I deal with the issue about these trains. And Honorable Dlamini, I'll tell you that for me, I'm actually shocked that we can have a country of 50 million or 55 million people who can be misled in this way. That someone writes a story in a newspaper and all of us accept it. The locomotives were delivered here in Cape Town. Honorable Dipuo Peters and Mr. Molefe, Popo Molefe, in fact, the first locomotive was received by Popo Molefe when I was on leave. I was not even here. We traveled on that locomotive from Cape Town. We went to Stellenbosch and back again. We traveled on the same locomotive from Cape Town, from Johannesburg, when people came for the jazz festival here. They traveled on these locomotives and say, guys, these are perfect. I took journalists, including the journalist who wrote the story, and I said, you must sit in front. I actually made a joke and said, you must put on a makarapa because according to your theory, these trains are too tall. We are going to hit something, so protect yourself. I'm putting the evidence here. Where do they get this story from? The story comes from a document called the Transnet Track Maintenance Manual. This manual says a locomotive must be, and here's the number, 3,965 millimeters, so 3.9 meters. And they then pump these things and say, this is the standard in the country. These trains are 4.1 millimeters, so 4.1. So they said, no, the manual is 3.9. So these trains are tall. They even drove in the newspaper. They made a nice drawing there showing the measurements in one of the newspapers. And I read this thing. But the whole country bought this story. The Transnet track maintenance is not the standard for South Africa. The standard is very simple. It's captured in what you call the SENS document, which is the South African national standard, and what you call the electrical safety instruction. What does it say? It provides two numbers. Firstly, the electrical lines must be for a minimum of 4.5 meters long in terms of height. That's the first thing, not 3.9. Secondly, it's saying between the train, between the what you call the contact wire and the train, there must be a 150 millimeter gap. Is there in this document? Now, if you take that as 4.5, with a gap of 155, then you'll see that you are using the appropriate standard. You'll actually see that the locomotive is not 150 milli. There's no gap. It's actually a gap of 210, if you take that standard. And I've argued and said there's no any other standard. I've written it in my submission today. And part of the Honorable Swart, part of the documents that I've emailed, which I think will be circulated, I've put two documents, the SEN standards, as well as the other document. They'll show to you that this country was misled. But at that time, of course, all the newspapers said it's breaking news. Montana is an uneducated native. He can't even measure. He even employed an unqualified engineer, Daniel Mtimkulu. They did all of those things. Everyone believed it because surely this guy is from Mamelodi. He should be corrupt. They can't even measure. But the facts are there. The measurements are here. And that is why I've assisted the committee and given the facts. And I think I'm saying that it would be better if, or probably the Portfolio Committee on Transport can actually have a similar inquiry that this committee is having. And say, let's test this thing. I asked Minister Hadebe, was cabinet ever briefed? And I was shocked to find that government, the cabinet has never discussed it. So I said, how does it happen? Government invests 100 billion into BRASA. And you read in, ministers read in the newspapers that toll trains have been bought. Nobody bothers to ask a question. It's quite extraordinary. So the issue is that the trains are not tall. They've moved around the country. What happened is that I think a year after or two after they've been delivered and I'd left, Popo Molefe took a decision that, look, there was corruption in this contract. Let the trains be parked and they're sitting there. And that is why you see that the long-distance service has completely collapsed now. We're still having trains. We spend out of the 3.5 billion rand from this contract, we've already paid 2.6 billion rands, and the trains are parked in Bramfontein under the Mandela Bridge. So there's no truth to this thing. The journalist has been misled, and why was it happening? And there's a Gupta link here. Transnet, who's our sister company, and you remember Transnet and PRASA were part of the old company called the South African Transport Services. And in 1989, when the apartheid government was facing a fiscal crisis, and it could no longer invest in infrastructure, it decided to commercialize and they separated. Transnet was created and the South African Rail Commuter Corporation was created in 1989. That became PRASA in 2009. And Transnet, our sister company, its division, Transnet Engineering, wanted PRASA to buy its locomotives via them. Why did they want them asked to buy via Transnet? Because we'll then buy them via, they'll give them to China South Rail, because China South Rail was already working there. So the journalist who write this story, who takes such a strong, he had actually written a book on the Gupta state. He doesn't actually realize that indirectly he's actually doing a bidding for the Guptas, because the people who fed this information to him are people who are actually saying 3.9. They distort this thing so that PRASA should buy. Where did and we had Honorable Minister Malusi Gigaba when he was the Minister of Public Enterprises. How can we buy trains from overseas when we don't have the capacity? I was invited, I think at that time, the DA's member of the committee was Honorable Ian Ollis. Me and Ian Ollies debated this matter at the Cape Town Press Club. And I said, and they said, we've got capacity. I've written it here, and my Transnet colleagues can challenge me if they want to. Transnet is our sister company. It's got huge capacity. But in 2012, because there's been almost 30 years of underinvestment in our railways, you go to Transnet, you go to the largest company, Union Carriage, the capacity to design a modern train, and I'm afraid the capacity to design, the drawings, the technology, we didn't have in this country. It's been eroded over a period of time. And that is why the PRASA strategy is written on the assumption that we do not have, but we must actually take measures to build all of that. They took the president to Goedespoort in Pretoria. You were there.
And so, we're there as a committee.
As a committee. Now, people do not understand. Goedespoort was not manufacturing. They awarded all their contracts firstly to General Electric, which is an American company, and then China South Rail, and with 1,000, they awarded to China South Rail, Bombardier, bid to GE. All of those things were brought in, kept at, and they were assembled in Goedespoort. That is different from local manufacturing. That is different when we say, I'm going to use local minerals, for example, let's say iron ore for the steel that we do, and you start to localize in a real way. Transnet is a sister company, but I met with Transnet just to explain to them from a scientific point of view that you do not have the capacity to build modern trains. Maybe now they've moved, and because all of us, you know, it's costly to build, to invest in this kind of things. The Chinese have shown us how it's done. The Chinese realized that their railways was a break on progress. What did they do? The Chinese then focused a lot of resources, but they allowed their engineers to go and be trained by Bombardier, Siemens, and everyone, and they forced them to localize. And they were able to do that. That is why the Chinese today, when I went to Shanghai or to Beijing in 2000, we got into a train like Shosholoza Mail, Honorable Chair. We left Beijing, we went to Shanghai. It took us almost 27 hours. It's Shosholoza Mail. 4 years, 5 years down the line, I went back. I traveled from Beijing to Shanghai. It took us 4 hours because the Chinese have mastered the art. But they realized that the technology and the experience and the knowledge was sitting with the Japanese, was sitting with the Germans, and they came up with a strategy over a long period of time to make sure that the technology is transferred. They've got it. We were following the same thing. But I was told, no, like Imuntan is doing his deals all over the world. So that is science, and I'm challenging everyone to say, I've come to the committee, I presented these facts, I presented the measurement. Let them come and tell this committee or any other committee of parliament to say there's a different standard to what I've presented. And I don't think anyone will stand. Start with the journalist. Bring Popo Molefe. They will never challenge the science that I put into this thing. I've even said I'm prepared to debate it in an open forum so that anyone can challenge me that what I'm saying on this, you know, because this country trained me and sent me everywhere to gain the skills. I'm applying the skills. I'm not, it's not superstition what I'm talking about. It's science, and I think that my love for railways comes from the fact that this country has given to me, and I've used the time to ensure that I understand every aspect. I woke up in the early hours of the morning to travel on the trains just to understand what is the logic of this thing. And the reason why I wanted to stay at PRASA was not because I was making money. My colleagues as CEOs were earning double than what I was earning. It's because I wanted to ensure that we've got the proper handover so that the new CEO, you remember the due diligence exercises on railways was done under me when I was still in the Department of Public Enterprises. It was done when I was in transport. It was done even when I was in that thing. So that knowledge is not sitting in PRASA. It's sitting in my head. That is why the system is collapsing today. Somebody says, like, he left with PRASA and he's back. Is it true? Not because there are no competent people. The truth of the matter is that we didn't have a proper handover. These guys wanted to get rid of me, but they allowed the entire knowledge. It's in my head. I'm going to write
Thank
books
you very
about
much,
this. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Muntana, I can see the passion you have for your work. Honorable Luyenge, you see the passion.
I unfortunately, Chairperson, we are so traumatized and we really need counseling as this committee. Out of what we are hearing, really, this is heartbreaking. I want to appreciate, Chief, the attitude that you have adopted towards this kind of scenario, that you are fighting for the survival of our country. Seemingly, Chairperson, I don't know if it will be proper that there is a truth commission so that everybody must be called to come and declare. Otherwise, we will call everybody, because seemingly these skeletons are full, you know, in a number of drawers of us. But safe to say, it is good that we are engaging in this process. You better die for the truth rather than living for lies like Jesus. You will get that divine intervention, that divine protection. It is upon you. I prophesy here. Can you please indicate, Mr. Montana, when the Guptas were introduced to you in September 2012, did they indicate the amount of wealth that they had at the time, or they came with nothing and anticipated to get out of our country? Just know that. And secondly, when Mr. Ben Martin, the deputy minister, was mentioning your name, after your interactions, even during his tenure as minister of transport, did he ever show any negative attitude towards your disbelief in doing wrong things? When this passer rolling stock was introduced, were the origins of that concept declared to you? If so, were they innocent? Can you tell me and this committee and the people of South Africa, if the majority of the politicians and unfortunately our leaders are part of this, in fact, all of them, they are our leaders, were they coming to you on behest of ordinary people for you to assist, or were they coming to you for their own benefit? If you can elaborate and clarify that, because there is a mentioning that you have made that Mr. Godongwana cried foul of a particular security company, and you became unpopular for not considering other pleas from other leaders. I want you to also elaborate on your rejection on what the then Minister of Public Enterprise, Mr. Gigaba, regarding the capacity that he claimed to be in existence in the country. Why did you think there is no capacity, or what is it that he put forward to say we have enough capacity? Yeah, can you respond to those?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Member. I think, firstly, Deputy Minister Ben Martins, I can't complain. He supported me. I think that what I wrote in the statement there, I believe in it. The only time, as I said, I took issues with him was the fact that he mentioned that I brought the Guptas. And I thought that the statement shouldn't in the first place have been made. And in fact, I was surprised that he responded to the testimony of Ms. Daniels in the way that he did. But other than that, I can't complain. I think that on all matters involving the Guptas, he did support us, and I'm glad that at the end we walked at Cape Town Station, and he was able to take us into his confidence. Why he had acted in a particular way, but he defended us, and I think today he can take credit that the trains that he supported are being introduced in the country, as it were. The origin of the rolling stock, you won't believe it, honourable members, and I think I see honourable member, and I'll explain why. The former mayor of Ekurhuleni is smiling at this point in time. Chair, Parliament has played an important role in the rolling stock program. Sometimes when things happen, we don't realize that some of the discussions and interventions come from Parliament. I was in this very room. That is why I'm getting agitated, Chair, in a positive way. In this room, in 2011, I was making a presentation to the Portfolio Committee on Transport. I think that Stuart Farrow was part of that. After my presentation, I picked up the chair of the committee was Honorable Ruth Bengu. I raised the presentation. I said, I'm raising the red flag. If we don't intervene with our railways, they'll collapse. That was in 2011. That was about 7 years ago or 8 years ago. And the Committee of Transport said, and there was unanimity amongst even political parties, to say we've got to do something about this thing. There was a trip to China, and that trip, in fact, was not only the Portfolio Committee on Transport, it was both the Portfolio Committee of Transport and of Public Enterprise, chaired by Mr. Peter Maluleke. A delegation went to China, it came with a report about how the Chinese went. They gave me that report. I studied that report about how to implement this. And the result of that was the trains that we have. And I think that Parliament is not just about oversight, it's about making the kind of intervention. And I want to take this opportunity to pay my respect and tribute to those two committees at that time, because what we did is because of the they use oversight to facilitate finding a solution, and that's what Parliament should be doing, solving those kind of problems. The origin of the rolling stock, so Parliament played that role. I then had to find, as a bureaucrat, as a technocrat, what is it that I must do to make sure that we give effect to this thing? You know, the first time we went, we did our numbers. Currently, we are buying 3,600 coaches, which is 600 trains. That was not our model, and we are buying those over a 10-year period because we had separated the contracts into the first 10 years and another 3,000 so that they can make 7,224 something coaches over a 20-year period. Our model was different. We had looked at population growth in our cities.
Maybe, Dagamondan. Just get into the response and say, yes, I feel it was innocent. If not, I had a concern like this, because I don't have the luxury of time. But I want you to get into other questions.
Apology, Honorable Member. Ask all your questions.
I'm reading them there. So, but the long and short of it, we wanted to buy different numbers. We wanted to buy over 8,000 trains over a 12-year period. We were told it's not affordable. A study was done, a feasibility study. It came back approved by cabinet. So what is being implemented today come from that. Most of our trains were built by Union Carriage. Transnet is effectively the maintenance site of that industry. And you remember who owned Union Carriage? It was Marion Roberts. So these were two sides that were complementing each other. But the truth of the matter is that because there was no investment, we lost. When I visited in 2007, I visited Union Carriage in Niger. When I arrived, the last design engineer had just left. Transnet specialized on refurbishment and everything, not designing new trains. And I asked them, let us use the investment by Transnet and the investment by PRASA to make sure that we can recreate that capacity. You know, in the contract that has been signed by PRASA, we made provision that the facility in Nigel to build new trains must be owned by Transnet, not by PRASA, because Transnet is not an operator like PRASA in respect of commuter trains. You know, Konongwane, it's true. You know, I remember Minister Sbun Ndebele. I respect him because he's a kind of man who'd call you and fight with you and say, the people in Durban or the people there are complaining about the service. And I must also compliment, Minister Dipuo Peters, she got into the trains. And I think that. But the other leaders, when they came, they wanted contracts. And if you don't get contracts from them, you're an enemy. That's what they've done to me. So that's a problem that we have. So they think if you say it can be done, or sometimes we even advise, learn to ayenziwa in this way. No, they don't want the bafuna in this way. It must be done in this way. That's a weakness we have. You have appointed us. We are officials. You have trained us. And when you come as a minister and you say, I want to do this thing, it's my job to go into the details and say, Minister, this thing, we can do it, but the risk are the following. Let's take this route and not that route. Finally, Honorable Gungubele is smiling because he was a member when he was in the PEC. We bumped into each other on the flight from Devon. And they just met as the PEC of Gauteng with the PEC of KwaZulu-Natal. It was the route towards Mangaung. And we were sitting at different seats, and he called me, we sat together. And we discussed this rolling stock thing. And I said, the entire engineering belt is in Ekurhuleni. Everyone wants this rolling stock. But Honorable Gungubele, I'm assuring you that if you want to stimulate, you want to create jobs, you want to stimulate our engineering sector, this factory must be in Ekurhuleni. And that he facilitated as a mayor, that we actually get land and everything so that this factory is done there. And I must congratulate you because supported us as Ekurhuleni to make sure that this thing happens. So yes, there were leaders who intervened to make sure that things happen. And so when we speak about this, he smiled. Precisely because he knows. We discussed it on the plane. And what was the purpose? Unlock the engineering industry that is in places like Boksburg, Jimiston, and everything. Make sure that you feed them into supply components into this particular process. And yes, those are the ones that we must thank and support. Look, I think one of my officials, my spokesperson of PRASA, when Honorable Gigaba made the statement, the person responded, and I was upset. I had to discipline him to say, look, we don't respond to ministers in this way. We don't disrespect our leadership. This thing will deal with it internally through government. But the minister, I'm saying in this submission, he was wrong to believe that Transnet has got the capacity more than they have in there. The Transnet capacity must be built. It is in the best interest of the country that Transnet engineering be supported. And I know that with a CEO like Siyabonga Ngagama there, he understands the industry very well. That will happen. But he couldn't claim at that time that they had the capacity. They didn't have.
The Auditor General.
Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Mr. Mantana, for your lengthy document and also for your courage. You heard from Dr. Fundisi Lungeni, who said that you will be protected. I fully agree with that. And it's interesting how many of the MPs here, the chairperson, other MPs have been threatened because of the work that we've been doing. And it seems similarly that you've been threatened for standing for what you believe is right. But I just want to endorse the fact that, as you indicated, you prayed before you come in, you came here. And as we know, and I said this last week to Mr. Koko, urging him to speak the truth. The truth will set you free. And we also know, as I said on national TV, when people were threatening us as MPs, threatening our witnesses, that we know, Isaiah 54 says, no weapon that is formed against us shall prosper. So I want to just thank you for taking the stance not only to expose what the Guptas have done, but also the extent to which the ANC, also certain members of the ANC, may have been complicit, and we know a lot of evidence has been heard in that regard, but to the degree that it seems that members of the ANC also let you down, and I think that is also an important aspect. And I agree with you that this should also form the basis of a separate inquiry, possibly by the Transport Portfolio Committee, because what you've said today has been highly explosive, and whilst we are limited to certain of the aspects dealing with Eskom, I think it would be very important to investigate fully the issues around PRASA in order that you can also be given the opportunity to clear your name, as you have done to a certain degree today. I want to just start by the issue relating to the Guptas when they first approached you and Mr. Salim Essa. I'm sure you've been following the debate around the Transnet locomotive contract as well. And we also will be investigating that as an oversight inquiry. But I'm sure you're also aware, and you mentioned the name of Mr. Salim Issa and South China Rail and the attempts, which I find absolutely devastating to those members, to those people, and very disturbing that when you went, you had the meeting, you went to Berlin, and people were contacting you, suppliers were contacting you and saying they'd been asked for money already. Is that correct? They, at that stage, were already being asked to pay bribes.
That's correct, Honorable Sir.
And that would then, the corroboration of that would be, well, let me first ask you, the reason for disqualifying South China Rail, was it specifications? And please keep it short, it was they didn't comply with your tender, is that correct?
That's correct.
Were you quite surprised when you heard that South China Rail had received quite a large locomotive contract from Transnet?
Well, firstly, I think I thought it was not in line with our strategy for industrialization. But secondly, I think that already at that time I knew what was happening with China South Rail and the Guptas. And when I saw someone like Sharma chairing the board or committee on procurement at Transnet, I had no doubt that the books would be cooked.
And I'm sure that you're also aware of the leaked emails and the good work that has been done by investigative journalists relating to the Transnet contract on with South China Rail and to Questra, where it is alleged that massive amount of 5.3 billion rand kickback, 10 million rand per 50 million rand locomotive that Transnet is buying via South China Rail. Are you aware of that? And so it does corroborate. Sorry, would you like to add to that?
I'm just confirming that I'm aware. Thank
and that you. Was. Tequestra, the sole director of Tequestra was Salim Essa, that features prominently with the Guptas, with this inquiry, and I'm sure with our Transnet inquiry. And that's the person that you also referred to in your evidence. Is that correct? What is staggering to me if one looks at this Transnet contract, South China Rail and Tequestra, is a clause which sets out large details of what would be done, but at the last moment it says here, one paragraph, it is noted and agreed between the parties that all the services are provided as a pre-project service and will conclude on the signing of this contract. And that is a straightforward bribery, in my view, of 10 million rand per 50 million rand locomotive contract, which we will be dealing with. But it corroborates your version. And I think that is key, because at the end of the day, we have to balance on a balance of probabilities what your version against what other people will say, what Mr. Ben Martins will be saying tomorrow. And so I just want to commend you for the stance that you and others took at PRASA, for standing for honesty and integrity. And had decision makers at that stage taken a stronger stance, and not, as you say, then it might have been, now it's fashionable, but then people were warning you, don't go against them. They're very powerful. And you experienced that yourself. You had to buy a firearm to protect yourself. It's thuggery to me. Had those cautions and that letter you sent already in September 2012, had it been listened to, we wouldn't sit in the situation we're sitting with today. Would you agree with that?
I fully share that view.
The situation we're sitting now relating to the Guptas and the whole thing about Eskom. When you see a modus operandi here, where you see if a person stands up against them, they are removed from the board. Would you agree with that?
It's the same modus operandi across entities, indeed.
Absolutely. And whilst I think your document sets out incredible good work that SOCs have done, that is a major problem when you see a certain family able to, with the cooperation of other high-ranking persons right up to the president and his son, operating to remove people that stand in their way. Would you agree with that?
Well, of course, I agree with that sentiment, Honorable Swart. Of course, I don't know specifically what considerations the president will take when he appoints, but I think we've seen that, and I think I agree fully with you that the conduct of the Guptas was unlawful. I think I've seen it, and even with the Transnet contract, I think you see similarities. In fact, I was in 2011, during the state visit to China in 2011, there was a number of agreements signed between China South Rail and the Guptas. There was one signed by Lazarus Zim, I think with China South North Rail rather. And you could see that the strategy has been set that the rolling stock investment on Transnet as well as on PRASA side, how it's going to be shared amongst. So we need to go back and start to undo some of that work. And I've seen it with my own eyes. Yes, I think it's something that if we've acted on time, we wouldn't have seen the road that has set in, and even reversing some of the major gains that we've made as a country.
One, hopefully, with the new sheriff in town and new action being taken, that there'll be restoration of some of those funds that have been taken. And we hopefully will see some of those international finances and international contracts being undone, and traces of where those funds are, as both this committee operates as well as the Commission of Inquiry into State Capture.
Honorable Swart, you know one thing I like about these investigations taking place is that they follow the money. And why I like about it is not the same as you debate in newspapers. I did that, I didn't do that. The flow of money shows you who benefited. You know, for me, I've been investigated. I've asked them, I'm waiting for the day you're going to come and say it flowed to Montana. I haven't seen it. And I think in this particular case, we need to do that in a rigorous fashion without any fear or favor.
And I presume that you've already been asked whether you've got any foreign bank accounts. Is that the reason why you were followed in London?
Well, I've never had any bank accounts out of the Republic. For me, if this country doesn't work, my family is in Mamelodi, my children live here. I don't need to go to any London. I don't have any other passports of another country. So when I dream of a South Africa of our own dreams, it's a country that is peaceful, that has got livable cities, a country that meets the needs of its people. And so there's no any other country I dream of. And that is why must I work with people who've got passports for Dubai or India, that have got three passports? I don't have. If South Africa bans, I burn with it, and that's why I'm committed to it more than even ever before. After actually I've left PRASA, I love this country more, because in South Africa you experience different things in the morning, and in the evening you feel like you've had five different countries. So I love it here. I'm not going anywhere.
I agree with you, Mr. Mantona, and I share your sentiments as a fellow South African. We are in this together, and that's why it's so important for us to shed light. It's like there was a song called The Midnight Express, Shine a Light on Me. And we are shining a light. We shine in a light on corruption. And that is something that we are doing at this stage, to expose it. And so I just wanted to ask you a little bit about the version of Mr. Martins. You've been very commendable to him. You're a good friend of his. But you did hold him to account when he did not, in your view, say the truth relating to the meeting. The indication that he will say, and it is interesting, here he says there was an issue that he invited Tony Gupta and Lucky Montana to his government-sponsored house to discuss a matter relevant to transport. There was an issue with regard to the renewal of the board, and Lucky Montana and Sifiso Buthelezi wrote me a letter with regards to that matter, saying they believed that there was influence from the Guptas to have them removed as board chair and chief executive at PRASA. One presumes that was what the meeting on his version was about. But there were two meetings that you've now set out. Would you just explain a little bit further about that, please?
Well, I think it's part of my submission, Honorable Swart. We never discussed the board or governance, because when I first met the Guptas, there was no issue about governance. I didn't even know. In fact, there's a joke that my chairman used to say, when I briefed him that I met with the Guptas, he used to say, I don't know anything about the Guptas. You are the ones who are bringing them to me now. So, and that's a joke that we used to have. So I think Honorable Martins may have confused the dates. When we met at the beginning, there was no any other issue, and I put it in the statement. When I say it will not be untruthful, I don't know whether it was. I'm not saying it's deliberate, but the first meeting when he introduced me, these guys wanted the rolling stock tender for themselves.
So, sorry, I've got very limited time. So it seems your version is very clear about the first meeting and the second meeting. Now, is there any reason why Mr. Martins would not mention that there were two meetings?
Because I think the second meeting when I came back was at my request. Maybe that's the reason. And we had a big fight there. But I think he knew beyond the second meeting that the issue of the board arose only in October.
Later.
It didn't arise at the beginning. And I think that's something that should be corrected.
I think we will raise that with him tomorrow, because
he
conveniently, and I've known Mr. Martins for many years as well, and I hold a similar view to you, but it's strange that he seemed to have forgotten the first meeting, and that's why you correctly set him straight on that. His version seems to tie in with the second meeting, and he did not mention the first meeting, or there was a confusion about that. But what is very interesting is because his version then is directly contradicted by Susan Daniels, and is very scathing, and it's unlike Mr. Martins to use the language that he used, such as liar and ignoramus and that. That's not the Mr. Martins I know, but he was obviously quite agitated about that, and he'll give us evidence tomorrow further. But what is interesting is Mr. Pravin Gordhan, who's a member of this committee, warned Ms. Daniels and says people are going to say that you've lied. They're going to say that they're going to detract from you. But thankfully, you've come forward to give us much further evidence, which is very helpful on this whole issue as to the two different meetings, and we'll ask him about that first meeting tomorrow. What is also interesting, that other members have also come and said meetings with Mr. Salim Essa did not take place, such as Mr. Corker, who happened also to have a meeting at Melrose Arch. Let's get that right, Melrose Arch, and not Melrose Cheese, but and also indicated that Mr. Salim Essa was not there, but he happens to have his offices there as well. So there's a lot of evidence that we need to put together, but I just want to lastly just thank you for the second part of your evidence, which is very important for us to bear in mind, that whilst we're focusing on the Guptas, there's one large aspect as well of politicians that also have benefited. And you're very open in that regard as a member of the ANC to have said there are ANC members, and my colleague has said that evidence is before Parliament as well. And we need to bear that in mind as well, that besides the Gupta element, there are other associates, business associates, that were benefited as well. So I want to commend you for your evidence and appreciate that. And again, from our side, we pray for your protection and thank you for shedding light on this. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shivambo.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I think perhaps the...
Welcome back in 2018.
Oh, yes, like I'm crossing with the Standing Committee on Finance that is dealing with other important issues like tomorrow we're going to be dealing with that as well. I think the submission by Comrade Lucky is refreshing, and it's a far cry from the convenient amnesia, the convenient forgetfulness that defined the people who brought advocates next to them here. And it's quite strange that those who had white lawyers next to them were the most forgetful of evidence leaders in terms of what happened. Even things that happened like less than a year ago, they kept on saying, "We do not remember, I do not know," all of those things. But I think it tells the kind of characters that we've been dealing with up to so far. I'm going to ask specific questions and quick questions about the following individuals, about Salim Issa, about Iqbal Sharma, about Tony Gupta and Duduzane Gupta, Oswald Mashaba as well, Zulim Kize, and then Maria Gomez. On Salim Issa, you said you convened a meeting in Zurich. Do you know who was in that meeting? And what was the agenda which was discussed there?
Well, I haven't met Salim Issa at all.
Yes, I'm aware. Yes, I'm saying that he spoke about the meeting that he convened of
people
that were interested in Zurich.
That's what some of the manufacturers who were summoned to that meeting and who conveyed that message to me in Berlin. So I think that it was not one. I think that it seems it was quite a couple of those. And my view is that I could ask them if they are willing to even confirm to Parliament, to corroborate what they've said at that time. But I can't mention their names, but there's quite a couple of them who were summoned to Zurich and money was extorted from them.
And then who had submitted his name as part of the evaluation board of PRASA?
It was the
Indian guy.
The Indian guy, yeah. He brought in the two CVs that are submitted here today.
I think maybe, Chair, it must be noted that Salim Issa is the person who was like the biggest shareholder in Trillion Capital, which got $500 million from Eskom for doing nothing, as per confirmation of one of the employees. And the second person is Iqbal Sharma. He is part of the people whose names were recommended by the Indian guy. And he later on became the chair of the committee of Transnet that evaluated a bid which resulted in the awarding of 50 billion rand tender to China South Rail and China North Rail to supply the rolling stock to Transnet. What was the price which PRASA had reached per locomotive or per in terms of the whole process? Do you remember, or do you have got information about that?
Well, I think that on the commuter trains, I don't know what would have been the average per locomotive per coach, but on the locomotive, I think that we were, unlike paying 50, I think that we're paying for the diesel locomotive, which is what has been delivered already. We're paying on average about 32 million per coach, per locomotive.
32 million?
32 million indeed.
And I think when we deal with Transnet, we'll realize that ended up at 50 million rand per locomotive. And a part of it was paid to companies that are linked with the Guptas. And I want to understand when you then reprimanded both Tony and Duduzanizu in the second meeting when you came back from Berlin. What did they say? Did they threaten you with your job?
Not Duduzan, as I said, that he didn't even speak much in that meeting. But Tony, Rajesh Gupta did threaten, and actually he focused his attention on Ben Martins, Honorable Ben, and said that we told you we didn't want Lucky, and you told us that he's your comrade. So for me, it tells me that there was a discussion previously when this issue was raised somewhere, but it became evident in there. They accused me of supporting Bombardier. And I said, but there was no basis that was provided for that. They said, you met with Bombardier. I said, well, I'm the CEO of Prasa. I met with Bombardier. I met with the French. I went to Spain to meet Talgo. I met Kef. I met Mitsu in Japan. I met the Koreans. I said, so.
That's
after
fine.
I met all these companies.
Who got the rolling stock contract in Prasa?
It's a company called Gibella, and it's led by the French company called Alstom.
So who were the anchors of the Gibella part, the B partners on the, who were the main major names there?
The 30% BE we appointed separately, they were not linked, and that is why in the media there was criticism that I'm doing a forced marriage.
And then the BE, who was it? Sufambo?
No, Sufambo was not. Sufambo is only involved in the locomotives, not on the
rolling stock.
Not on the rolling stock commuter trains, no.
So who was the BE in the rolling stock, the 30%? Who was appointed?
There were two groupings.
Okay.
Firstly, the French Alstom came with a company called New Africa Rail, and this New Africa Rail had shareholders. There are two people that the two guys who were there. It's a guy called Monde Africa, and the second one was Talente Mieni.
Okay.
And the third one, I think that it was a guy based in. Who formed the company with them was a French guy. So those are the people who were there. There was a grouping of women in there, but I can't recall the name.
I think that's useful. Oswald Mashaba, do you know him before he got the tender for locomotives in Prasa? Do you know each other with Oswald Mashaba?
No, not at all. I only knew him after Sufambo was awarded the tender.
So you said that the TG of the ANC at that time said that because Sufambo is going to receive about 400 million rand, they demanded
465 million.
465 million. They demanded 10%. I am aware that at a subsequent stage, Sufambo paid possibly 20%, in tranches of 40 and 39 million to Maria Gomez. And a guy called George Sabelo, who is a business partner of Edward Zuma.
Well, I became aware that Sufambo paid to Maria Gomez. And I think that I was told that they signed a contract for certain services that Maria Gomez or rather a company will provide. I don't know I read about the payment to George Sabelo to a law firm. But I don't know for what specific services that payment was made.
So you did not link that payment to the demand of the TG of the ANC that 10% must be paid from Sufambo, because that almost like resulted in almost a criminal inquiry on whether that payment was not illegal or not. Didn't you link that the two payments are linked? Because I'm saying this in relation to the fact that you said you discussed the finances of the ANC in the house of Maria Gomez with the TG of the ANC at that time, Zweli Mkhize?
Yes, I think, look, at that time, firstly, I think when the media inquired about it, they asked about the 80 million rands. You recall that it emerged from the affidavit of Mr. Popo Molefe. He said, look, 180 million has been paid to the ANC. At that time, he didn't. But you see, for me, I was interested in a number of, but because of, in the interest of time, I was interested in a different area when I first followed up that matter. But I didn't connect at that time this, but the media was saying, no, like you were the one who was paying the TG via that payment. And I rejected it because I think that in court they've dealt with a lot of weaknesses on how the contract was awarded. But you ask me, at that level, at my level, at the level of our chairman, was it a corrupt deal? Did I facilitate the? Was I paying the ANC 80 million? No, I think that.
I think maybe as a separate process, we'll try to draw that link of what was the ultimate destination of that 80 million rand that was paid to George Savela and Maria Gomez by Sifambo. And whether that relates to, you said that there are other business people who are involved in the whole corruption. Who are these business people? I don't have the document that you are reading from. Who are these people? Maybe for record purposes, who are these people who are contesting for PRASA contracts and businesses?
Well, in the submission, I of course do mention the different political and economic forces. Look, on the business side, I think that there were people who lobbied, I mean, who pushed. If you look at, I'm not sure whether I would say by virtue of doing that they were involved in corruption. For example, China North Rail. China North Rail, they worked with Lazarus Zim, and they did come to PRASA, but they came to us in a different way. And this I'm dealing with in my supplementary affidavit to the public protector. Because what happened is that there was a lot of pressure on the former CFO of PRASA, Ms. Cindy Mabasokoyana. And she said, look, there's pressure for me to provide certain things. And I said, no. It can't happen. Who's putting pressure on you? So she then relented and said to me, look, there's this guy's Lazarus Zim. Lazarus Zim, Sandile Zungu were trying to meet and find answers. I then said I'll meet with them. I then met with them in Pretoria. I met with Lazarus Zim. He brought in a very big delegation of the Chinese, and they actually brought in the model of the commuter train that they want to offer. So they were involved. They were involved in that, and so that would be one good example of business people that were involved, and others are of course beyond the rolling stock arena where business people. I mentioned, for example, here the fact that when we were doing the security contract in 2011, which was awarded in 2012, people like Ino Gonongwane came and say, look, I'm coming here on behalf of a particular company. Can you look at them? But the issue is that what is not known in this country is that we as CEOs in particular are not involved in procurement processes. So we get recommendations. Sometimes things go wrong there. But because we are not involved, yet we are accounting for whatever the company does. And that I think, is something from an accountability point of view, becomes unfair. Because if someone messes up there, you ultimately take. And I suppose it comes with the job, and you must take that accountability.
Thanks. Maybe last question is, I saw today the chairperson of Eskom and the acting CEO released the financial results of Eskom and say that Eskom is in a debt of about 470 billion rands. With your experience with state-owned companies and with you having played a certain role in the whole transition from a commission to a state-owned company, what do you think we should do with Eskom? You can take your time, because I think at the end of this inquiry, we should then develop some durable set of recommendations on what should happen to state-owned companies, what should be the governance structure, what should be the accountability mechanisms, what should be the durable solutions, and how do we insulate them from political influences in the manner in which they've been influenced in the recent past. What do you think we should do? What is to be done?
Thanks, Honorable Shivambu. I think earlier on I dealt, Honorable Chair, with some of the things that I believe to be our achievement. I think some of the things that we did as a country was we've succeeded. We need to perhaps consider reversing. Remember the different businesses about the Transnet. You've got generation business. You've got the transmission side. You used to have what you call Eskom Enterprises, which was doing quite a lot of work even outside of the out of the country. I think that model we need to change. At that time when government was trying to change Eskom, I think the primary objective was that, look, let it have a balance sheet to be able to go to the market and raise this. And I think that we came up also with the issue about the regulatory body, about how you do, because there's a major contradiction, I think, with our own state-owned enterprises. Does it only affect Eskom? It affects Transnet, for example, on the regulated by NERSA on the what is called on the pipeline business. I think that is a regulated side of things. We've got AXA, for example, with the regulatory committee about what do you do with all of those. Then we've got SAA, for example. And if we were to go through them, SAA, I'm raising in a controversial issue in the document. What is happening? We have SAA buying aircraft. Everything, Johannesburg used to be a hub. It used to land there. And when it landed in Johannesburg, we know that SAA played a major role in moving out all of these people. When we travel to London, that's still the model. But today, you'll see that the Emirates move more people out of Cape Town directly, and they land here. And they've got a strategy about how many people they'll bring into their own country, the seats for tourism and economic development. We think the problem with SAA is only about its internal efficiencies and everything. I don't believe so. I actually think that here we've got a major failure of policy, okay, where we give everyone, I mean, you land in Durban. There are more flights to Dubai or whatever, or to the Gulf from Durban. British Airways here is sitting here. All the direct flights, for example, from here to London, it suits us. Maybe when you fly from here, you try. But the impact on it, so the current model does not support the asset base that we're trying to create. So I think that is one major contradiction that we have. Secondly, I mentioned in the report here, and I'll finish with Eskom, Honorable Shivam. When you look at what we did, there was an insistence at the time, particularly between 1999 and 2004, that when you restructure state assets, all the proceeds must go to the National Revenue Fund. Now, we know that not each and every cent that was generated from these entities went back to be reinvested into rebuilding the capacity. And I think that is something that the committee needs to reflect on. Whether when we say we want to unlock, the value out of these particular entities, we should be dealing with them in that particular fashion. I remember the Honorable Sakima Makozomo, who was still CEO or Managing Director of Transnet. He used to argue this point, to say, and he used to talk about the Bolivian model. He says, if you are restructuring Transnet, you are taking money out of Transnet, or you are generating proceeds out of the restructuring of Transnet, let it be invested to strengthen that particular business. But again, we're a developing country. We've got a lot of competing priorities. So part of the issue, I think that's what government is trying to do. And Parliament has passed the money bills in such a way that everything has to go through that route. So we may need to review all of that. Eskom, in my view, I think that we did two major studies. One of them was that we're looking at the BE appetite for for investment. This was, I'm talking about 2000-2001. Research or evaluation that was done showed or proved beyond reasonable that we didn't have any BE with the capacity to do that and to be involved in the generation capacity or the investment requirements and that was. And we left it at that. I think it's a mistake. You know, when you say you want to build, for example, black industrialists, it requires you to take a bold step, including paying money up front to build this. And I've said this in Parliament. A lot of people do not like that. Yes, you don't like, Honorable Swartz, for example, the kind of prepayments that we've seen, which have nothing to do with the actual contract or building of capacity. But you can't avoid it that you're going to have prepayments if you want to build black industrialists and you want to build capacity. And it's something that our national treasury must need to think about carefully, because you can't have DTI can say build black industrialists, but you have to put some of the resources up front for that. The second issue about Eskom is that a lot of private sector investors were saying we're not going to be, Eskom is going to wipe us out if we invest money, but you still have the generation and the transmission business together. So that is one of the things that we've got to look at because we've always been stuck to the issue, and maybe it's because of the history we come from on economic policy. We said that we wanted to ensure that Eskom remains an integrated company. But you can still have an integrated company, but with a bit of allowing a bit of competition and the distance that is there. And I think that you've got the issue about tariffs. We know that there's a big conflict on the issue of tariffs, not only between Eskom, not on the energy side. It's happening on the ports, where Transnet, for example, had wanted C10 tariff levels, and that the ports regulator wanted a different thing. And you recall, when we came here to Parliament at the time, we wanted to pass the national ports.
Mr. Mutan.
That's fine.
I know I can see the passion that you have. The information that you have for us, it's over flooding in your head. Hence you said you've got these trainings, but you were trained as a person, and it is in you. It's not within the entities. But I think you are doing very well. You are giving us information that we really need, but we still have members that wants to ask questions. Mr. Mare. Honorable Mare.
Chairperson, and just one last issue.
No. You went. You know, because you asked question. Your last question. When you asked your last question, you had only 1 minute that is left, and Mr. Montana took 7 minutes to respond to your question.
Oh.
So that was part of your time. Can we give to Mr. Mare? Just Mr. Mare will
one,
give...
130 seconds
no,
to put one
no, on no, 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 Mr. Shivambo, Uyan Mosha Nyan. Can you hold that question?
It's not a record issue.
No, Mr. Honorable Shivambo, can we please... respect the procedures of this committee. Mr. Marek, do you want to ask a question? Yes, please ask the question, Mr. Marek.
Only. Thank you, Chair. I just want to ask about Swift Mambo. While they were appointed, it seems they didn't have railway experience. Shivambo. Yeah.
Shivambo.
Shivambo.
No, Shivambo.
Yeah.
Shivambo. I think it's only me and Honorable Shivambo can explain it properly. No, the.
Mr. Mundana, can you take your phone and put it a little bit? Your boss is distracting us.
Honorable Maredi, Swifambo, like Gibela, you remember that when bids are issued, companies come together and they form new entities. For example, if you look at Swifambo, it was different people. not only Oswell Mashaba, I think that it was a company called, if I remember, a women-owned grouping called Identity. I can't remember the full name. And then in their bid, they then worked with a company called Foslo. Now, Foslo, and so the locomotives that they were bringing to us were locomotives. They say, we've got the technical partner, and this technical partner is Foslo. Over 100 years of experience. It builds the best locomotives that are there. When we built Givela, when we awarded the rolling stock tender, Givela is a new company, but the company inside with the experience and the knowledge about building new trains is Alstom. But Alstom didn't bid. It was only part of Givela. But when they provided the solution, they provided solutions about trains that they built in Brazil. Now, those trains were not built by they were not built by Givela. They were built by Alstom. So it is when bids come out, companies, people combine and companies combine for purposes of bidding. And when they succeed, then they build that capacity to use existing capacity that is there.
They also received prepayment.
Indeed, they did receive prepayment, yeah.
Okay.
Very much. You've done me a very good. Honorable Kungubele. Switch off your mic, Honorable Mare.
I never thought I would be in a position to call you Mr. Montana. I'm used to call you like. When you talk about Deputy Minister Martin, you seem to be giving an impression that his reaction at a later stage seems to say to you he innocently found himself in this pool, if you describe the way he later reacted. Your comment?
Just to get clarity, I refer to his relationship with the Guptas.
There's a point he called you to your meeting, you met the Guptas. And it appears that over time, he got irritated by this whole exercise. What does that sort of suggest to you about him?
Well, you know, I would, you know, when I talk about the Honorable Martins, I'm able to speak about him because I'd fly from here. Before he was a minister, before I was even at Brass, I was just an official. Well, I think in a way he realized that he was being put in a very difficult position. Because these guys were making, the demands were unreasonable. But some of the things that they were saying to him in my presence were absolutely disrespectful. I mean, you tell a minister, say, well, we told you in a corner. And I think that they decided to take a principled stance, because I think I've listened to that Tony Gupta chap. It's one of the most disrespectful people I've ever seen. I think if it was not at this meeting, we were in the streets in Mamelodi, I would have dealt with it differently.
In other words, is it possible that he might have been consciously involved and later realized that this is wrong?
It's possible, yeah.
What do you think is the reason for his deposition as a minister? Deposition from transport?
Well, there have been many theories made, but one of them was that the one linked to the narrative about the Guptas has been to say, look, he's unable to control Lucky and Sfiso, and therefore that's the reason he left. But my view is that, you know, he shared everything with me, and I don't, it was not his understanding of things. So I just accepted it's a prerogative of the president to appoint the ministers, and we kept on working together when he was in energy, particularly about some of the renewables and all of those things. So yes, I think that was his understanding.
It will be interesting, Mr. Montana, if you can share with the committee your view with regard to the cost of this weird way of working to South Africa development. I just want to throw an example. There's an argument that, for instance, Dubai had the capacity to manufacture locomotives. And because of this approach, the preference of China, Dubai has been towards closure to the cost of about 3,000 jobs and about 16 million revenue to Funder Bail per month. In that space, what's your comment?
Well, let me start with the example that you gave, because, you know, I think sometimes people don't analyze where we are. And if you don't answer it in a scientific way, you make mistakes. Many of the companies have told us, we asked them, for example, before we went back on this rolling stock. And if I remember well, I think it was United Nations Industrial Development Organization? Is it UNIDO? It did an assessment of the capacity. All companies told us we can do this and this. But when the results came, I know Dobel very well, and I know some of the... They were the people who worked with... if you look at the trains in the Western Cape, we call the 8Ms. They're different, silver. Now, those were the only trains that were built in the 1980s. Who designed them? It was the Japanese, but they worked with Dobel here. Some of the people who built those trains are working for Prasa. But at the time when rolling stock or locomotives were bought, I don't think that Dobel could do even some of that work. There'll be an important part, components that will be able to build. There'll be bogies, for example, they'll be able to. So there are certain things they're able to do, there are certain things that we're not able to do. But they never had the technology to deliver a complete train or a complete locomotive where they were sitting. But the cost of doing that is huge for the country. We need to build our capacity, but I think we need transition to achieve that.
So do you think it's a fairy tale that Dubai is closing? If it's closing, what could be the reason if it's not this one?
Not protecting our industries. I think that, Honorable Gungubele, you have seen, for example, that when you look at Ekurhuleni, the closure of industries, part of it is that we have allowed the industrialization to accelerate at a much faster pace, and we need to reverse that. But yes, some of them we are afraid to take simple decisions that companies like Dobel, like Union Carriage, like Transnet, we need to give them work and just to sustain our jobs and to rebuild that. So it's a narrow thing. You need it's a fine line that you need to find. And I think if you do that, you say, Dobel, I don't want you to go down. I'm going to give you 40 locomotives to sustain the jobs over the next 5 years. People say it's corruption. It happened in the people were losing. You'd recall from Nigel in Sakan, were losing their jobs. I put in 40 locomotives then say, sustain these jobs. And I think it was important for the country.
There's a point where you were speaking about an attempt to appoint people to the board. Amongst them is Chimimanye and some Indian appointees. There was an intervention that stopped that. My question is that before that, there was a board in existence. Do you know of any objective reasons that led to that initiative or that exercise?
There was none, Honorable Gungubele, other than to create a board that will serve the interests of the Guptas.
The other critical point is that I think other members have already raised these issues. It's going to be critical that when you talk about AGMs that were postponed, the meetings that took place in Berlin and anywhere else, the verification of those is going to be very important, because what you are sharing with the committee is very crucial. it would be a very dangerous thing if it falls on the lack of authenticity of those staff. So I'm sure you are confident that is easy to do. Am I correct?
I support that.
Now, again, if I go back to Tubel, let's use Tubel as an example. I think you're saying to me, the fact that Dubai interfaces with Japan in whatever way, if you are talking of creating jobs in South Africa and sustaining South African industry, even on the locomotives, there was a possibility of throwing in Dubai as a partner to sustain your comment.
I support that fully, not only for South Africa, but for the continent. You'd recall, Honorable Gungubela, the African Union, after the PRASA and the Transnet Rolling Stock Program, adopted a resolution that gave South Africa the mandate to become the hub, to be the hub for rolling stock supply in the whole continent. So companies like Dobil should actually be positioned and assisted to deliver on that mandate.
Towards my end, unusual for sure. As you speak here, there are those who will speak against you. Now, I'm going to ask you what appear to be difficult questions. Do you have any knowledge of Roy Moodley? Do you have any knowledge of Mackenzie Mabunda? What relationship do we have with them historically, even if it affects business with them?
Thanks very much. I know both gentlemen. I know Roy Moodley. Roy Moodley, I found him at PRASA. He runs a security company called Royal Security. And those who have made accusations, they said you've appointed him. The truth is, Roy Moodley was appointed when Metro Rail was still part of Transnet. I think he was appointed when Mr. Hani Mateya was still CEO. So he was there. He was there. In fact, he's been in that industry 10 years, long before.
He was not brought by you then?
No. He was never appointed by me.
We'll say he was your Gupta.
Well, I've heard that where they say, someone said, well, like he's fighting this hand of the Gupta, but supporting this side of the Gupta. So I've heard those. But for me, I think the facts speak for themselves. And I'm not. People who always speak against you can't please everyone in life.
There's a narrative that Mabunda resigned as a civil servant. And when you left transport with Jeff, the current minister, there's a moment where Mabunda would have secured a business on the recapitalization. And consultancy and a diesel supply. Your comment on that?
Honorable Gungumele, you know, I'm smiling. Mackenzie Mabunda was a colleague of mine at the Department of Public Enterprises. I was in the ministry, was in the Department on Financial Performance or Analysis of State-Owned Enterprises. But Mackenzie left not for no other reason. If I remember well, it was actually when the late Collins, the minister, Collins, was the MEC, Chabane, when he was the MEC for, was it economics and finance in Limpopo? He wanted the project to be done on restructuring. That's where he formed this consultancy, and he moved up to Limpopo. He worked there for a while. So again, that shows. And then what he did is that, when he came back, he then got involved in quite a number of things, working with Transnet as well. And then he entered into an agreement with Deutsche Bahn, which is the German the railway operators. And that is why he came, when we signed an agreement with DB, they said he is our BE partner. I've read in newspapers that he then got involved in the recapitalization. He never got involved in the recapitalization. They said he's got in the newspapers. They also repeated last week, Mr. McKenzie, a friend of Montana, got 5 billion rand worth of contract. It's also false. In 2012, there was a complaint made, Honorable Gungumele, that he's a friend of mine because he worked with me. The public protector, Tulima Donsela, investigated this, and in a report derailed, he actually dismissed that particular matter.
I think you've dealt with the part. What is happening in Kibela now?
Well, I haven't been. The only thing I see when I'm in Pretoria is that I only see the trains that are being tested. And I stand next to a bridge where that train passes. I take pictures, and I said, we bought the most beautiful trains that will serve this country for the next 4 decades. And that makes me proud that I was a CEO of PRASA when all of those great things were happening for our country.
My last comment, Chair, is that I just want to say to Mr. Montana, to join other colleagues, you may not be aware of the major contribution you've made in this inquiry. I've known you as a young, enthusiastic chap who's been making marks. And depending on what other people are going to say about you tomorrow, I hope you stay the way some of us know you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gungubele. There's an honorable member there who wanted to ask one question. He is one of the members coming from other committees, but he has interest in which we welcome the members that are coming from other committees to be part of us. Your presence is highly appreciated, and it shows the committee that we are not alone in this. You are with us. I'm giving you just for one question, one question that you should put to Mr. Montana.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Manny DeFreitas. I'm a member of the Transport Portfolio Committee, and I was also a member of the Portfolio Committee in the previous Parliament under the chairmanship of Honourable Ruth Bengu. I don't know the procedure, and I presumed I was going to ask more than one. Are you saying I'm only allowed to ask one question?
I'm going to ask one question. That's okay. Unfortunate.
Okay, that's fine. I just want to then, Mr. Montana has admitted and confirmed that he knows Mr. Roy Moodley and has had dealings with him. What does he say, Mr. Montana, what do you say to allegations that you... through Roy Moodley, properties are bought and given to you. What do you say to that? Thank you.
Thanks very much. I think I put a statement on the 8th of February, and it's an 8-page statement. And I think earlier on, Honorable, raised that issue. I've explained it in detail. I own properties paid for that I bought via APSA. I had 10.5 million rand bond facility. I was paying 97,000 rand a month. Roy Moodley was not. I never met him when I bought most of these properties. Roy Moodley, I never appointed at PRASA. I found him there. As I said, he joined, I think he was one of the security companies at PRASA long before I joined PRASA. And I think that's very important. But he never bought a house for me. The issue that I did is that I've worked with this lawyer, and I think it's lawful. If I take my property and I trade, and I asked earlier on, I don't know, the Honorable De Freitas, if you hear, say, if I own 9 properties or 5 properties, I can't sit I can't stay in any of these properties. Some of them are in the same street, by the way. Because you know, when you don't explain why do I own two houses in one street in Pretoria, in Main Street, Waterkloof, and let me put it why I own 2 houses. I owned a house. I was a DDG for public transport in the Department of Transport. Amongst my responsibilities was the taxi recapitalization program. My house was attacked. People came with AK-47s to come and kill me at my house. I was a government official. The state failed to protect me. when crime intelligence came to do an assessment to look at what, they told me, you can't stay in this house because it's next to a shopping area. These guys are going to kill you because once they see, they come to that shopping area, you can't chase them because they've got the right to be there. So we think you should move. I then bought a house in the same street, but very far from that. But I couldn't move my family or my children because they were attending schools in the area. I bought the bond. The APSA gave me a bond of 2.4 million rand for that house. Some of the houses I saw in newspapers, pictures taken. Montana has this house. I was saving the state. I left because of security concerns. The state said to me, you must move. The only thing that the Department of Transport paid for me to move, they didn't pay the cost of the house. I paid it through this bond. They only paid what the relocation costs for me to move, including transfer fees and all of those things, for me to move and be protected. That's what happened. So I think that what happened is that, Honorable De Freitas, people investigated me, and let me tell you, and I know because I've seen those reports, why Prasa spent 200 million rand investigating me is because it started as a small project. And every time these investigators investigate, they can't find anything. They were told, go and dig. Okay? They kept on digging on me, and the amount kept on going up, and they became desperate because they had to show something. And then they say, no. Like, you work with these guys. I've read the affidavits of some of the guys. I called one of them. I've seen you have deposed an affidavit in support of Prasa. And the guy was very clear, Louis Green from Pam Golding. He told me how he was manipulated to sign an affidavit because they blackmailed him to say, like, he's involved in crime. If you don't sign this thing, you're also party to this thing. They said to him, we'll prepare an affidavit for you to confirm that he came and viewed this house. So for me, I've been involved in Cape Town here. Before I became a member of Prasa, I owned 4 different houses, and I sold them to make money. Now, I'm still waiting for someone to come to me and say, it was a crime for you to buy a house, buy a house in Parkwood. It was a complete wreck. The bank gave me 2 million. I developed that and I sold it 4 years later for 6.8 million rands. I'm told I committed a crime. What kind of crime is this? So this is something that I do in life. I can't stop. And if it means I can't work for government because I buy houses, develop them, and sell them, then I might as well not do it. So I think yes, I'm sensitive to criticism. We are public officials. If there's a relationship and I think one thing I've learned is that if I have an opportunity to work for government, there are certain things that I will not do again. I think many people also made money in our own names, because when people go and say, no, I'm a friend of Montana, and they enter into other deals. For example, when I read the article last week, it says the company in Spain paid Mabunda 75 million rands. I didn't know about it until I saw it in the newspaper. But they say Montana was involved. I was never involved in that. And then when I read the newspaper, they say Roy Moodley made millions of rands working with Siangena. I didn't know that the nature of the agreement between the two until I read about it in the Sunday Times. So people will have that. But for me, I'm saying, can they stand the test of time? I've read all the reports, including that I've got a copy of the latest report done by National Treasury. And I laughed. You know what that report says? They were searching that forensic report must deliver like a final blow. That forensic report describes somebody was appointed or didn't follow procedure, or when they appointed, they extended the contract, it was below the delegation of authority. It doesn't say money was stolen. And that report is there. It's being leaked in the newspapers all the time because they try. You can never, Honorable Chair, someone will say I'm arrogant. But for me, a lot of spears have been thrown at me. And every time they land in a different area. When I move there, they land where I was standing. Or where they land on me, they can't deliver a devastating blow. I'm not arrogant because I think Honorable Swart said it. The truth will set you free. And And I've never been quiet until the, for the record, I've never been quiet until today. Look in the public. Actually, a lot of people have said to me, can you keep quiet? Can you keep quiet on these locomotives? When the matter between Swefambo and the Emprasa went to court, I applied to say, look, some of the facts, including about the height of the locomotives, are wrong. Can I apply to be a friend of the court and assisted? Of course, legally, they dismissed me and said, no, you can't come in there. Because I believe that what we did as Prasa, I think was in the best interest of the country. And I'm afraid that we don't realize later when the, our railways has collapsed, because the cost of bringing our railways out would be huge for this country.
Thank you, Mr. Mundana. And you keep on moving away from the mic, and you don't get recorded. Honorable Qabashe, Nganga Qabashe, my apologies, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Mr. Motana. Chairperson, I am on page 32 on the story of toll trains. You refer to it as the modernized trains. And indeed, they are modernized. We when we travel in other parts of the world, you travel on an underground train, and then you so wish that we could have them in South Africa. So we're very happy over the moon that by this time, other than the Gau train, would have number of underground train running, up and running in South Africa. But today, you have given us some information that some of us were not aware of. But given that you carry a institutional memory of having served in different government departments and state entities, besides the court cases, what happened when you left, with your institutional memory, what will be your advice now if really the investigations revealed by government that, as you are indicating, those trains are suitable to run, as you have indicated today? Just put yourself back to in if you are a CEO of any government entity, what will be your advice? What will be your action to rectify this? Because you are saying to us, to me, what you said is that government invested 100 million, if I heard you correctly, 100 billion, thanks, 100 billion to this project. And that's a lot of money for those trains lying there for so many years. That's my first question.
Thanks very much. I'm already talking to a lot of, I talk to particularly Prasa colleagues. They do speak to me, but very informally, of course, about what needs to be done. We discuss railways all the time. I think the first thing, of course, that we need to tighten as government is the appointment of boards. I think that there's no doubt in my mind that that process can be one that either enhances a company or can destroy it, can make or break in simple terms. And we've seen in many entities that that's happening. I was actually quite happy when I listened to Mr. Jabu Mabuza at the press conference today. And he said we'd agreed with the shareholder on what we need to deliver as a board. But he said, we are also making an agreement with management so that we as a board do not come inside the business, as it were. I think that oversight role doesn't mean abdication. There's no board chair or a board that says we've given it. They've got the right to ask any question about anything. Even if it's 1 cent, the board has got the right to ask those questions. But I think that we need to ensure that scrutiny is properly guided, as it were. Secondly, I think that We are not protecting. I think our people, particularly the skills that we have. South Africa lost a lot of railway skills, particularly in the 1980s and the early 1990s. We need to ensure that we find different ways of dealing with that. But most importantly, I think for the government now, my view is that the metro rail system will not last for long. We've got to find a way of prioritizing the acceleration. I mean, let me give you one example. We bought these new trains. The factory in Ekurhuleni is getting ready in Niger. Some of the trains will not. We're only getting 20 from Brazil. The other trains will now be built from here. But PRASA in the last 3 years has spent a lot of time chasing after me that the depots for the new trains have not been built, not a single one of them. So I think it's better that we stabilize the business, the work gets done, okay? That is very important. So they don't even realize that not a depot, when the trains arrive, the newspapers carried another story, Honorable Chair, and said the trains now, they're referring, not the locomotives, they're referring to the commuter trains, that there's no alignment between the train and the platform. Of course, they were trying to say, again, Montana's name. But we had a program that, after we awarded the contract in 2012, PRASA's going to have 5 years of intensive infrastructure program to make sure that the stations, the infrastructure, the depots are ready. But all of that work has not been done. And what will happen is that the contractor or Kibela is going to build the trains, but because they can't be taken, there are penalties in terms of that contract in that respect. So there are costs to all of these things. It's so short-sighted, but look, for me, it's our country. We must work for it. And if it means I work with the Department of Transport or PRASA to assist and work with the teams that needs to turn around the situation, I'll be more than willing. I'm not angry. I think some of the colleagues stepped me at the back when Popo Molefe came. People who committed crime at PRASA, who are still working for PRASA, who have done the worst things, are still there because the first thing they did, they realized, oh, Popo is going for Lucky. They went to him and say, no, we can tell you about everything that Lucky did. And then what did he do? He protect these guys. And they were singing as much as they wanted, but they couldn't deliver that. But rest assured, an honorable member, I'll assure the committee, this knowledge belongs to the people of South Africa, and I must, and I'll place it at all times at the disposal of our own people so that they benefit from these things.
Having said that, will you be willing to, as you're saying, you're willing to assist and you've been assisting, will you be willing to further assist without any incentives? Because people rush to become consultant for the departments or companies that they've worked for, and I don't agree with that. Will you be willing to do
no,
that?
No. I'm willing to serve. The only thing that I'll do is that I'll have to sit first with my family. Because you remember, they were hurt. I'm a father to children. I'm an uncle to children. I've got sisters. Sisters who work in hospitals, who are teachers. I've got my own mom. When I was coming home after having fought these battles, I just see people in pain and in tears. So whatever decision I make, I must respect them. So this has been a very difficult thing. But the principle is that, yes, I'll be willing to use what this country has given to me and to serve without those incentives. Our railways is in trouble. If tomorrow the Minister of Transport say, like, come and work with me so that we do this thing, I'll go there and help. I mean, of course, I'll continue buying houses and developing them and selling them. I hope that that will be written in the contract.
I take that will be a plowback to what you indicated that this government have developed you, and thank you for that commitment. My next question, Chairperson, is on page 44, going to half of page 45. It relates to overstating irregular expenditure to suit an agenda. In that, I'm not going to go through the whole statement, because all of us have your submission. My concern in that is that you are making certain allegations against the AG's office and against the board of PRASA, as well as the top management of PRASA as well. And I'm worried particularly that the office of the AG is a well-respected office in the and the land in relation to the work that they are doing. And if certain allegations like this are put in the public domain, it warrants really some kind of a clarification. And the Auditor General will not be able to be in this portfolio committee and clarify. But at some stage, we will be able to, if we were permitted, we will be able to seek some clarifications from the entities that form part of this portfolio committee. And I hope that other committee members that are relevant to this report that you have alluded to here are also listening or watching, and they will be able to pick up these matters. I can see that you indicated that you wrote a letter to the speaker and the scoper, and I hope these matters are taken on board. And I think at some stage, I don't know how, they will have to be clarified, because this is now a public document, and that office, we trust that office to continue working and giving us reports and in a manner that is trustworthy. I still have confidence and trust in that office, but I think certain things need to be clarified. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Honorable Ruth, one question.
Thank you very much. Mine is not a question. Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to make one point that the study tour to China had to do more with integration of transport in South Africa, the four modes of transport, which is rail, aviation, road, and maritime. South Africa doesn't have the connection or integrated transport. Two, it had to do with choosing a backbone of transport in a country, and rail transportation was chosen as a backbone because of it being a fast mover, also low in cost, and also taking more people. The problems that we have in South Africa is that 80% of goods are transported by road, whereas the ideal situation would be that 80% of goods are transported by train, and also commuter passengers are transported by train, so that the time of leaving from home to work is shorter and the amount of money that is paid is less. I would appreciate that beyond the investigation of this committee, then we go back to the report of the Portfolio Committee on Transport that I chaired and look at the recommendations that were made, because I think that putting a halt on the railway transportation upgrading program was a big mistake. This country would be far if we had continued with that program. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of Small Businesses. That alone gives us a lot of information, and thank you for referring us to your report. I think that will help us going forward. And I said before you said something, I said we are not alone in this as this committee. So your coming to the committee has added value in the in our committee today. I don't think Mr. Montana has to respond to anything now. I will just it's not opening. Into engavuliyo engafuna uvuleka yho kanazi ke ngedolo. Thank you very much, honorable members, with your contribution, and thank you very much, Mr. Montana. You know, at the beginning of this inquiry, the Committee on Public Enterprises undertook to allow implicated people or parties an opportunity to make submissions to the committee. That is why today we had the testimony of Mr. Montana, the former group CEO of BRASA. Mr. Montana was afforded the opportunity to state his version of events related to an alleged meeting with Deputy Minister Ben Martins, Mr. Rajesh Gupta, and Mr. Duduzani Zuma. Mr. Montana also related his experience during his tenure at PRASA and testified of various incidents of alleged unlawful activities, including attempts of influence tender processes. On behalf of the committee, I want to thank you for your willingness to testify before the committee. Your assistance and cooperation in helping the committee in the inquiry is commendable. The information you provided will also assist other parliamentary committees, as you have already done in other committees in their own oversight work. Mr. Montana, in your testimony, you also made allegations against various persons, as the Honorable Mganga Qabasha has said, including those in public offices. These allegations are of a very serious nature and must be further investigated by the South African Police Service or the Hawks. Mr. Montana, it is also important that you do not leave the matter here, but you make a statement to the relevant authorities who must investigate these matters further. Further, I encourage you that in the event that you receive any threats related to your testimony, please immediately contact the police. The committee is committed to further interrogating the information that you have presented to us. Will afford the Deputy Minister, Mr. Ben Martins, an opportunity to state his version of events. Further, any other person implicated in your testimony is also welcomed to make a submission to the committee to address any issue that you may have raised against them. The Deputy Minister is coming tomorrow in our meeting, and his office and legal team is in this meeting as we speak. They have been here since the beginning of the meeting. So the other thing that I would want to clear in this meeting is that the Deputy Minister agreed on the invitation to come to the meeting. So the summons were not returned because he agreed to come to the meeting. We were going to summon him, but he agreed that he's coming to the meeting. Therefore, the summons were not returned. Ms. Montana, thank you again. I wish you the best. The committee will reconvene tomorrow, members, at 9:30. M46, I'm told. That's Max Building. No, at 9:30. And we are leaving after the committee meeting. We will be leaving for Johannesburg to go to an oversight to ESCOM 2 on Thursday. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.